You have just tuned in to Thursday Night Talk here on KHSU. Tonight, Lorna Bryant and Kutcha Risling-Baldy will be hosting the Race Beat. As always, we welcome your contributions. Please give us a call at 826-4805. If you're out of the area, at 800-640-5911 and to our text line at 492-KHSU. Now over to Lorna and Kutcha.
Well, welcome to Thursday Night Talk, The Race Beat, a place for in-depth discussions about race, culture, and identity. Through conversations and understanding, we will discover our differences really aren't so different. The U.S. is preparing for the Thanksgiving holiday this week. Next week, the holiday is commemorated by family gatherings centered around a feast of turkey, ham, stuffing, and cranberry sauce. We also think of the image of happy pilgrims and Indians coming together for the first big feast. But what about the rest of the story? The historical facts versus the Mayflower myths. Joining me today is Kutcha Risling-Baldy. Kutcha is an assistant professor of Native American Studies here at Humboldt State. She's also joining the TNT team as one of our newest hosts. Most recently, Kutcha and I co-hosted a special Thursday night talk with the Indigenous Voices Forum, Columbus, Doctrine of Discovery, and Indigenous Peoples' Rights for HSU's Indigenous Peoples Week. Tonight, we are going to separate the fact from the fiction of the atrocious actions of, well, then we separated the facts from the fiction from the atrocious actions of Christopher Columbus. Tonight, we'll discuss the true story of Thanksgiving, or as Kutcha called it on her Facebook page, Thanks-taking. Kutcha, welcome.
Hi, Lorna.
So, I don't know where to begin with the story of Thanksgiving. Why don't you start us off, Kutcha?
I guess, where do we begin? It's really interesting because there's not really a clean way to tell this story. There's all kinds of intrigue and multiple ways that these things come about. Most people, when they think of the first Thanksgiving, what they're thinking about are the Pilgrims and landing on Plymouth Rock in the sort of 1600s. And that really has to do with the partnership that the Pilgrims develop with the local area Native people who are known as the Wampanoag. And a lot of people don't know their names, don't know who they are. That we don't usually think of like Pilgrims and Indians, but really it was a group of people. They're called the Wampanoag people. And what people say about the Wampanoag is what you're really talking about when you're talking about the first Thanksgiving is the establishment of a treaty between the Pilgrims and the Wampanoag people about how they're going to live together. How are they going to be people who are living in the same space? And that's really what this is sort of all about, is this moment where they're sort of establishing a relationship together. And that relationship gets established very early, but it also very quickly becomes a strained relationship between people because of the way that the Pilgrims sort of don't respect that relationship. The main guy that you're talking about from the Wampanoag people who are doing this is a guy that they called Massasoit. And he is the leader of the tribe at the time, and he kind of establishes relationships with the Pilgrims. That's kind of what we're basing this story on. But there's also like so much more that if you go around Thanksgiving is actually really about how this becomes a holiday for us and how this becomes the thing that we learn about in schools.
Now, I know I didn't learn this in school, but wasn't there also an association with English explorers who actually took natives from this region on a ship as slaves?
Yes. And so one of the people who was very involved in creating this alliance between the Wampanoag people and then the Pilgrims is a guy by the name of Squanto. And a lot of people know him. Actually, they made like a cartoon about him. Squanto. But what is interesting about Squanto is he actually is from another area, and he is kidnapped as a child and sold into slavery. And so they take him from his group of people. They sell him into slavery. He actually lives for a long time with the people that they sold him to, and they teach him English. And he escapes from them and comes back to his people. But what he discovers is that most of his people had died while he was gone. And so he then goes to live with the Wampanoag, who take him in. And when the pilgrims come, they're like, you speak English. You should go talk to these people. And at this time, the pilgrims are having kind of a hard time settling in. And so he shows up and he actually teaches them how to plant corn and he talks to them and he says, hey, we can sort of work this out and I have these people that can work with you. And the pilgrims are funny. Like, I've actually read a lot of historians looking through like pilgrims' writings about this time, and they say that the pilgrims are, they're really coming over here with ideas about native people that they had gotten from stories that explorers had told of like far off lands full of like these giant people who were just savage and would kill you by looking at, like, who could throw a tomahawk from a mile away and like hit you between the eyes. And because travelers want to make the Americas seem very dangerous, because then people want to go and pay the money to talk to them and listen to their stories. So the pilgrims come with all these ideas about who these native people are, and they get very scared because they don't know the land, they don't know the place, they don't know how to build anything, they don't know like what's going on. And they refuse to even talk to anyone. And for the first like 3 months that they're there, the native people won't come and talk to them. They sort of stay away and sort of try to see like, what are you doing here? Like, what are you trying to do? And part of that is because there was this history of kidnapping people and selling them into slavery, of introducing smallpox, of killing people and massacring them. And so they're like, we have to see what you're all about before we actually show up. And this actually sets up that whole story of the pilgrims don't quite know how to live here. And so they start to get very scared. They don't have enough food. And then Squanto shows up. He speaks English and that he's able to sort of show them how to plant corn. And then he buffers between Massasoit and the Wampanoag people to kind of say, let's create some kind of alliance that we can all come together and figure out how to live here in a way that we can all sort of like thrive and be here.
So without Squanto's help, what would have happened?
I mean, who knows, right? Because I think that I think what some people say is the pilgrims were very afraid. They were always very afraid of native people. And even when they brokered this agreement with Massasoit, they were still really afraid of them, that at any moment they could sort of like turn around and destroy them, right? So a lot of people kind of, to be reminded of the vulnerability of pilgrims at this time, it's not like they show up like the conquering heroes of this land. They're sort of show up like, we're very afraid of what's going on. We don't know how we're going to survive. And they need help. And the native people show up to help. They don't show up to like destroy them. They show up to help and then say, we need to figure out how we're going to work in this situation. And part of that was because all of the things that had been going on before that, the kidnapping and putting them into slavery, the sort of like coming in for massacres, the disease had made a lot of native populations even more vulnerable than they would have been. And so they needed people to ally with.
So when did the story go south then? When it sounds like the pilgrims were kind of meek and passive people and they really needed the help of Squanto at this time. So when did it go south?
Well, so they make this agreement with the Wampanoag, with Massasoit, and they say, you know, what we'll do is we'll protect you and you protect us, and we won't sort of like take over everything, and we are here as partners. They then, after Squanto teaches them to plant corn, they have a big celebration because they're like, look, we're not going to die of starvation. And they said what happened was is they actually start like shooting guns and cannons because they're so excited that, oh, we finally figured out how to live here and we're going to not die. And so they start shooting everything. And the Wampanoag are listening to this from far away and they're like, what is happening over there? And are these people now stabbing us in the back? Are they trying to do what these other people have done? And they get very suspicious. So they actually create a party of Wampanoag people, including Massasoit, to show up and say, what's going on here? And the pilgrims try to say, well, we're celebrating our harvest. We're celebrating this thing. But they didn't invite the Wampanoag to that celebration. The Wampanoag showed up because they're shooting all these guns in the air, calling attention to themselves. So the Wampanoag actually weren't invited to celebrate this harvest or this Thanksgiving.
They crashed the party.
They came and they were like, we don't quite believe what you're telling us here. We actually think you're going to turn around and do something by shooting everybody. So we don't really believe you. So they decide that they're going to stay. They're like, we're going to stay here. And there's I think what this is, there's like 90 of them, and there's only like 30 pilgrims at this period of time. And so the pilgrims, of course, get really freaked out because all these Indians are like camping around the area trying to figure out what's going on. So they don't invite them to come and have a feast because they're kind of a little bit like scared of them. But Massasoit, he looks around and says, well, they're eating and they're celebrating. And we do that too. Like we celebrate when something good happens and we feed people and we can't just show up. And, you know, without anything. So he actually sends out a bunch of his people to go and they hunt deer and they bring back a bunch of deer. And they're like, we can contribute to your feast and be a part of this. And so they actually stay there with them. And what they say is there's like this kind of like politeness from the pilgrims where they're like, well, okay, you can stay and we'll try to be nice to you. But they're also like really scared about if something could go wrong. And that's kind of what some people trace back to the first Thanksgiving is this moment where they're not invited. They come because they're kind of convinced that something is up and they have to make sure that these people aren't breaking their agreements with them. They stay, they bring food, and then everybody kind of eats together.
So in my research and preparing for this show, I found a site and they debunked six key things in this. So can we go through them a little bit? Like, so, and this goes to what you were just saying, the romanticized story that we hear in school when we're making our turkeys out of our hands and, you know, the feathers and the Thanksgiving bird and the whole bit. We learn that the Native Americans and the pilgrims came together to give thanks. So that really didn't happen that way.
No, not at all. And what's interesting is after that first sort of like Thanksgiving celebration, things start to go downhill very quickly between the pilgrims and the Wampanoag, in part actually because Squanto and Massasoit get into like a fight over who's going to be in charge. Mm. And Squanto tries to be in charge and Massasoit's like, you're not in charge, I'm in charge. And they're both going behind each other's backs to deal with the pilgrims to figure out who's going to be in charge. And Massasoit gets really upset about that. And so he says, if you're going to keep talking behind my back with Squanto, then I'm out of this agreement. And so he pulls out of trade with the pilgrims because he's like, that seems to be your dude. Squanto seems to be your guy. So you stay with him, but we're out of this agreement because of that.
So is Squanto ever viewed as a traitor or to his own people?
Some people say he kind of dies under mysterious circumstances, right? Like he turns up dead, but there's not really a whole thing about how, right? So some people think he was actually assassinated because of that, but other people are like, no, it's because he's dealing with these kind of these people who will at the drop of a hat get rid of you if they think you're getting in the way. So they don't know exactly who, but they're saying there's like this intrigue. And what happens because of that is Massasoit shows back up and he's like, well, do you want to reestablish trade with me now that you don't have this other guy, right? And he continues to get really mad about what they're doing, right? So he sort of ends trade with them and he's like, forget you guys. But then he gets really sick and there's like all these stories about how they send word to the pilgrims that Massasoit's very sick. And one guy who was a friend of his, what's his name? Edward Winslow, I think is his name, Winslow. He decides to go out and see him because he's like, I think he's going to die. And he shows up and he starts giving him medicine and trying to heal him. He like stays with him and Massasoit gets better. And after Winslow helps him, then Massasoit's like, okay, well, we're going to become partners again. We're going to be people that work together again because you had come to my bedside and now I'm better. But at that time, because of everything that had been happening with like Squanto and then all the things that the pilgrims were starting to do by like expanding where they were, Massasoit's own people came to him and were saying, don't do this. Don't reestablish trade with them. Don't trust them. Don't do this. Like, our advice to you is that this is not going to end well. And it ends up not ending well. And people say that they wonder if there's no way to know, but they wonder if there is a regret on the side of Massasoit for everything that he had tried to do to establish this relationship, because in the end, they end up really sort of like trying to destroy this group of people.
This is a saga.
You know, it really is.
An unfolding...
Because I told you about his son and, like, how he declares war against them. Like, it just keeps going on and
wow.
on.
And when you spoke of Squanto and the betrayal, the possible betrayal, all I could think of is the original Snitches Get Stitches, or Mysterious Death in this case. Wow. So... The other fallacy that is debunked here is Native Americans and pilgrims, and this is the word of from the site, they were besties. Didn't sound like they were, like, real tight with each other.
No, it was always very tentative. And part of that was, again, because these stories they hear, they can't really, in their mind, Native people are savage, and that's the only way they really ever thought of them. And so they don't really ever create what is a real bond or relationship. And the difference is I think Native people come into these discussions with this idea that they're creating the same kinds of bonds and relationship that they were doing in their confederacies at the time, which is like, we are now becoming like kin, like family, and our relationship goes on forever. And so when we enter into this, we're taking it very seriously, and we're not doing that lightly. And the pilgrims are entering into it as like, this is good for now, but we're kind of like ultimately very scared of you guys, and we don't really trust you, and we ultimately think that you are at the very core like a savage group of people, not even being able to see Massasoit as the leader of like a confederacy of people or a government or all the things that they're doing to sort of help them, but instead to like fundamentally believe that he's savage at his very core.
So these group of natives have been in this area for centuries. They've sustained life. They have found ways to have sustenance. They have crops. They have hunting methods. They're civilized, but they're viewed as savages.
And they had watched as these people had come in and really done very savage things to their people. And still they would yet think, how do we form a relationship rather than judge you based on all the actions of other people? So people had been coming into this area for a number of years at this point, and, you know, really starting like a slave trade of Indian people, kidnapping them, selling them into slavery. You had the Jamestown colony, which was like established before the Plymouth colony. And that was really, I mean, that was run by like John Smith and like the whole Pocahontas thing. And really, like, Jamestown is a really crazy story, because they come in and get established. They develop a relationship in the same way with the people of that area, who were the Powhatan people. And that's sort of Pocahontas's people. And there's all these things about their relationship. And then in the end, they end up, that relationship falls apart because of what they do to Pocahontas. And they end up having this period they call the starving time after that, because they don't have Indians to help them anymore, because Indians said, we're done helping you, what you have done to our people, we're done. And they then go into the starving time, and then the Jamestown colony goes cannibal during this one winter, where they actually, there's like, they did this study a couple of years ago where they showed like these bones that they had found of this one girl from the Jamestown colony. It was very obvious that she had been butchered, and like that they had taken the meat off of her. They had also they said to try to get every part of the meat on her body. Like, they could tell the way that they were cutting against the bones, right? So all of that, and that's like very close to where the pilgrims then land, and it's like the Wampanoag, and there's no way that the Wampanoag wouldn't know what was going on in Jamestown. And all of that, and they still walk up like, okay, let's deal with this. Let's try to figure out what we're going to do with this agreement.
You know, when I see another human, when I see you, I don't see meat. So the term savage, I think it's applied to the wrong group of people in this story.
I think so. I think so, too. I think that, you know, I think that happens a lot. I think making Native people seem savage, or turning them into savages, it sort of justifies then what they think they want to do in the area, right? Because we can do all these things because they're not good people. They're savage people. And they can break all these agreements because they're not real people. They're savage people. And they're making like real agreements with people, treaty agreements that were negotiated, like sit-down negotiations. It's not like a handshake or an exchange of beads like sometimes we hear. It's like an actual sit-down negotiation. It's very formal. It's very ceremonial. And then yet to turn around and be able to just sort of forget that that even happened or pretend like it didn't.
Wow. If you're just tuning in, this is Thursday Night Talk, The Race Beat. I'm Lorna Bryant, and with me here is Professor Kutcha Rissling-Baldy of the Native American Studies Department at Humboldt State. We're talking about the real story of Thanksgiving. If you'd like to join in the conversation, you can call 826-4805. If you're outside of the immediate listening area, we can be reached at 800-640-5911. If you don't want your voice on the air, you can text us 707-492-KHSU. To make it easy for you, that's 707-492-5478. Now, Kutcha, you mentioned that when the natives crashed the party, they didn't bring a turkey. They brought venison.
Yes.
So what were some of the other foods that were at this feast?
A lot of it's sort of like educated guesses that are mm-hmm. done by historians. They said very likely eels were there, corn, clams actually were a big sort of feasting kind of thing that people used. And they said there's some evidence that there could have been like what they called fowl, but not necessarily like a turkey, but sort of like different types of birds that were hunted at the time. So really it's sort of like the things that were of the area.
So when you said eel, that was really surprising to me. Is there a cultural significance to the eel in Native? I know there is some connection with eel here.
Yeah, here in this area. I don't know for sure. I mean, I'm sure the Wampanoag had some. I mean, because they're on the coast. And so you're really talking about like a coastal group of people. And they're surviving off of things from the coast. But also, again, very likely their epistemological beliefs, the way they see the world, are built around the things that they're interacting with.
So is eel significant or just indicative of the region?
I think it could be both.
Okay.
Indicative of the region, but also significant probably to some of their older stories and the ways that they interact with like the land that they live on.
Okay. And what type of, we've talked about some of the meats, what about some of the other items that were likely served during this feast?
They're talking about corn and like roots, like different kinds of roots or root vegetables. That's really all I can recall, like off the top of my head.
Well, so let's go back to this, this celebration. After the, it feels like a soap opera, like you mentioned earlier, what happened next? So this meal was formed after the natives came unexpectedly. What happened after that?
And then sort of the falling out with Squanto. And then Massasoit, he gets sick and he reestablishes relationships with them against the advice of his own people. And then he passes away. And his son actually becomes sort of the next, what they call the sachem, the sort of head of the tribe. And his name was Metacom, but the pilgrims called him King Philip. And that was sort of their name for him, was King Philip.
They Europeanized him?
Yeah, because to them, like, they're trying to find ways that these things are, like, what they know. And so they're like, well, that's your king. That's your king. And so that's King Philip, right? And what was interesting about Metacom, or King Philip, is that he had grown up always having the pilgrims there. So he doesn't, his life is, his world is very different than the world of his father. But he was also very clear that he did not trust them, and he did not like what they had done to his people. He didn't like what they were doing to his lands. He made a speech where he talked about, like, you know, I'm going to fight for this place, and I'm not going to live in a place where I'm losing my home and my space. He said something about his dad. Like, at one point, he was giving a speech about who Massasoit was, and he was like, you know, the pilgrims forget. They pretend like we are not a significant part of how they were able to be here. We're not a significant part of their history. But he says, like, my father was the father of the pilgrims. Like, my father is the father of who they became. And they have no gratefulness for that. They are not grateful to him. They sort of like pushed him aside at the end of his life. And so in doing that, you're talking about him sort of noticing this building kind of conflict between him and the pilgrims. And he actually then, he's told by the English that he has to give up his arms, that he has to voluntarily give up his land, and that if he does that, then there won't be war. There won't be like any sort of like massacring or destruction. And he's having none of it. He's like, no, like, we've given you guys so much and you keep taking and taking and we're not moving. Like, this is our land and you made this agreement. So there's a big war that starts because of that. They call it King Philip's War. They say it's like the bloodiest war that has ever happened on American soil. And I think it was like 9,000 people died during this war. So,
and at that time, that's
a significant number, because there weren't that many English people here yet. And they're also, you know, you're talking about the Wampanoag people who are at that time, like, their numbers had been reduced because of the things that were going on. So it's an incredibly bloody war. And one of the things that happens is one of the native people who were working with the English turns up dead. And Metacom's soldiers are tried and hung for that. So three of his soldiers get killed for that. And he actually then, that is sort of like, for him, that's the end of the line. He's like, that's it. We're just going into war. Like, because you guys aren't listening. You aren't trying to do this in like a good way. And they fight for a very long time. And it's like, people say it's very violent. Like, it's a lot of showing up and like they would set whole like towns on fire and they would really fight because King Philip was saying, this is what we have to do, or they're just going to get rid of all of us. Like, they're going to attack all of us. So from the period of time where the pilgrims are creating this partnership, this kinship with Massasoit, to Massasoit's own son, who sees that that's not ever going to be the case, he's fighting a war against them. And he agrees to, like, at a point he agrees, like, we'll call a truce. They ask him to show up, and he shows up to a town, and they're like, all right, if you agree, we will treat you fairly. We won't just kill you or hurt you. And so they all show up and agree to surrender so that they can end the war. And what they end up doing is they end up taking all the natives who showed up to surrender and selling them into slavery. Wow. And this is where King Philip goes, see, like you cannot be trusted. There's nothing, there's no way that I can ever trust you again. And then that sets off a whole nother set of like battles on his part.
Wow. Well, this is all fascinating. Looks like we have a caller on the line, Danielle from Arcata. Danielle, what's your question or comment?
Yeah, hi. I've been to the Plymouth Plantation. My parents live near there and they like to take their grandchildren. And there are Wampanoag peoples who are there now who are helping share the story from the Indian side of the view and showing a village of what Indian life was like back in that time. And one of the men said to us that Massasoit was perceived to be like the chief, the leader, and really that isn't the whole story, that it was much more matriarchal society and there was more of a council of women that were in charge of decisions. It was sort of, he was just kind of like the communicator, you know, the messenger to carry things. And so I just wondered, I've always wondered I wanted to know more about that and wondered if you could explain that further and if that's true. And I'll take your answer off the air.
Thank you for your call, Danielle.
So most when you're talking about the tribes of like, especially the East Coast, but all over the United States, a lot of them are organized as what they sort of are called like confederacies or like democracies almost. And they have multiple layers of this government system. And part of that includes things like women's councils. And it includes things like different branches, what we now know as our own democracy, like different branches of government. And so Massasoit is, he's elevated as almost like a king or a leader. But at the same time, he's actually part of like a council. that's what they call the sachems. It's like a council of people. And so you're talking about people getting, like, being a part of this council, having, like, women be part of their, like, women's council to be able to sort of say, like, this is what we're going to do as part of our tribe. And again, so the decisions that he's making then are informed by all these people that he has to deal with, especially when you're talking about, like, this idea of, like, women being very involved in that. But the story we hear, because what we get from the archives, is really the English who are writing about this one guy as their guy. And that's what they understand as who I'm talking to. Because in their mind, you can't have a council of women you're supposed to approach to be able to talk about these issues, right? And so
that
then
can't be
good. So then they erase that from everything that they're talking about. And you sort of hear about Massasoit more than you hear about other things.
So if you don't like the truth, you rewrite the history.
Or if you can't even, like, sort of see it, if you're just unwilling to even acknowledge that it's a thing that exists.
That's kind of familiar right now.
Yeah. And it's really, I mean, it's the same thing with, like, King Philip, right? So most people call him King Philip. They call it King Philip's War. And his name is Metacom. He's Massasoit's son. He's named as a sachem, but they call him a king. They have to sort of really, like, put on to him what they think he is.
They don't recognize and acknowledge his true identity.
Or even sort of or even sort of that the tribe is organized in a very different way, or that it looks like a democracy, right? So we know now the danger of if people think that the only person they ever have to worry about or think about in terms of your how you're going to run something is the president. Versus thinking about us as a democracy that has many different branches of government that sort of feed into how we understand the way that our world is supposed to work. It's the same thing with Native people.
How's that working for us now?
Exactly, right?
Okay. If you're just tuning in, this is Thursday Night Talk, The Race Beat. I'm Lorna Bryant, and joining me is Professor Kutcha Whistling Baldy of Native American Studies here at Humboldt State, and we're talking about the true story of Thanksgiving. I hate to say this, but then what happened?
Oh, my gosh. So King Philip is fighting his war, refusing to give up. He ends up getting killed in a swamp. Like, he runs into a swamp during a battle, and then he gets killed. And sadly, what happens to him is when the English find him because he has been killed in this battle, they actually leave him unburied, and they behead him. And so they are very, like, to them, they have just won this great war, and they really treat him, like, with a lot of disrespect.
Savage.
Yeah, and they cut his head off, and then they leave his body there. And then his head actually gets sent to Plymouth, where the Pilgrims landed, the colony, and it gets put on display. For 20 years, it's displayed in Plymouth on a stake because they're sort of like making him into this trophy. And people, you know, could see this in public. And this, again, this is like display of power, but at the same time, you're kind of like, geez.
Savage.
Yeah, and so he gets displayed for 20 years, but the interesting thing about that is that they, when they cut his head off and they bring him back and they put his head on a stake and they put him on display, they actually have another celebration for the end of this war, and they call that another Thanksgiving. So they're like, we're having another Thanksgiving celebration of the end of this war. And so really what you're talking about is this continuing practice of saying we're celebrating something that happened, but the terminology, the idea of like this feast around this, the end of this war with these Indian people, and then treating them in this way, and then calling it like a Thanksgiving celebration.
Listening to this, it makes it a little difficult for me to recognize this as one of my favorite holidays. For my own family traditions, not so much the story of the Pilgrims and the Indians, but I feel a little guilty honoring this holiday now. How do I resolve that? How do I deal with that?
I mean, I think part of it is learning as much as you can about these things, and then understanding that all of this history feeds into the contemporary issues that Native people face, right? So when Native people are talking about why do you have to why do you have to know about the way that these things went? Well, it's because, you know, the Wampanoag are still facing issues today that can trace all the way back to what had happened to them during this period of time. The Pequot, who were the subjects of a number of massacres by the English that also lead up to these ideas about Thanksgiving, for a number of years, they weren't recognized as a tribe. And it wasn't until like the 1980s that they got federally recognized. And you still have tribes all over the United States who are not federally recognized, who are big players in history. And it's because we treat them as if they're just Indians in history, rather than it's like, these are the people of this area. Pocahontas's tribe for a number of years was not a recognized Indian tribe. The federal government was willing to say, you're not really Indians, but yet you are the tribe of Pocahontas, our sort of like number one myth of Indian people in the United States. So the political issues that we face, the fact that we still fight all the time to be able to make sure that our land is protected, like all of that comes from this same space. And if you're going to celebrate Thanksgiving, you have to know about all these things so that you aren't perpetuating the same sort of ideas about who Native people are.
Wow. So the second Thanksgiving was celebrating a massacre.
Yes. And so, and then see, but that continues again because, I got to tell you first what happens to King Philip's kids.
Did you miss a part of the story?
Yeah, so there's like, so it keeps going, right? This is the thing about this period of time, like King Philip's Metacom's wife and son, because the war is over, they end up getting taken into slavery, and it's called a reward of war. They're able to take a bunch of these native people from this tribe and put them into slavery. And they're like, this is your reward of war. But what had happened was, is they found out that of this group of people that were taken into slavery, one of them is Metacom's wife and one of them is his son, whose name was Philip. And so they're trying to decide what to do with them. And the church at the time says, we should kill them. We should hang them because they're part of this like treasonous group of people. But then the more people talk, they're like, well, we don't really want to hang a 9-year-old boy in front of people because that would not look good. So they decide instead that they will just sell him into slavery. And so they end up selling Metacom's family, who become slaves. That's sort of like how the whole thing ends. And that is, again, indicative of like, what's the relationship between pilgrims and native people? That's the relationship. It goes from this like beginning when they needed native people to the end when they're selling the relatives of the people that they made an agreement with into slavery.
I just got chills. That is deplorable. So tell me now, contemporary Native Americans. Like I said, I have just an uneasy feeling in celebrating Thanksgiving, having this history now. What about contemporary Native Americans and celebration of Thanksgiving? Is there a resolve to celebrate it as we know it today, or in the traditional, original, with the traditional meaning of it from centuries ago?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of us. There's a lot of Native people. Right? Yes. We're all very different from each other. I think that a lot of Native people approach what is sort of like celebrated as Thanksgiving in very different ways. In the Plymouth area, the tribes actually hold what they call a National Day of Mourning, in which they show up to Plymouth Rock, and they hold a day of mourning for what this means for them as a group of people. There are several people that hold like sunrise ceremonies or days to sort of remind people that Native people are still here and that we still have a lot of really important issues. They come together sort of like on Alcatraz Island and things to sort of say like, we've never stopped. And all these stories, we've never stopped. There's also Native people who celebrate Thanksgiving as a time when you are with your family and you eat food. Because one of the things that I've heard people say is, you know, this idea of giving thanks for something, for a good year, for a good harvest, that actually is very indigenous. It's something that we've always done. We always share food with each other. We share food and bless each other through food. If you go anywhere to a Native person's house, they're probably going to give you food. If you don't eat it, they're going to be offended, right? Like, so food is very central to how we build ourselves as a community. So we celebrate it as that time. And it's not anti-intuitive to who we've always been. And the thing is a lot of the spaces where we came together to celebrate in that way are what this idea of like Thanksgiving was based on, this celebration that we had as Native people. So whether or not you celebrate it as this holiday or whether or not you sort of say, no, this is what we do. We get together with family, we have food. And then some other people use it as a time to really educate, to call it things like Thanks-taking instead of Thanksgiving, right? Because that's really what it was about, was like taking.
Pretty much.
Taking the land, taking the resources, taking the people, right?
Yeah.
To sort of flip things on its head, to make sure that people have that as the center conversation that they're having.
Right. Looks like we have another caller.
We did, and he is preferring to stay off air. I did not get his name. Going back to sort of the historical context of all of this, if he was wondering if you could talk about the Narragansett tribe at all.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Michael.
Let's see. Where do we want to start with the Narragansett?
This is a new chapter in the soap opera, yeah, it sounds like.
So the Narragansett tribe were also a part of like Metacom, like King Philip's War. It was actually one of their massacres that sort of led to Metacom continuing to fight. So the Narragansett at one point, I think it's called, it's like the Great Something Fight, Great Something Fight. It was like the 1600s, 1675. There was actually like 700 Narragansett people were massacred by the English. And then most of those were women and children. And then they had like a 300, 350 more that were sold into slavery. And this is sort of on top of everything that's happening with Metacom and the Wampanoag, all these tribes surrounding them are also starting to experience like these massacres and then being sold into slavery. And for Metacom, that's the writing on the wall. That's sort of like it's not that they're just doing one thing. They're trying to take over the whole area. And so he sees what's going on with the Narragansett, and he keeps fighting because of that. And the Narragansett people, too, sort of like join in with what's going on because of that, because they're also starting to be targeted. The Pequots, too, they're also from around the same area. And they're getting massacred, and they're getting people who are selling them into slavery. And they're seeing that as like, it's like when we're talking about the English settlers, the pilgrims, we learn about them sort of as these religious kind of people, and they're coming here to sort of set forth a better life because they're being persecuted. And yet what you're really talking about is like the consistent massacring of Native people to try to get at their land and to try to remove them, and if not massacring, then selling them into slavery. And when you're talking about this slave trade, a lot of the times people don't sort of think about the number of people that are being sent overseas and being sold into slavery.
Wow. Again, the plot thickens. It's fascinating. So is there anything more you want to add before we take it into the final segment of the show? And I want us to talk a little bit about our own family Thanksgiving traditions. But is there anything that you'd like to share before we go into that segment?
I did want to say that when they're talking about the first Thanksgiving, some historians trace it back to Massasoit, the Pilgrims, because people say it's the Pilgrims. But what they say is like the first example of somebody actually saying Thanksgiving and saying, let's have a Thanksgiving. People trace that back to 1637. And that is the sort of turning point of the Pequot War. And what happened during that time is that the Massachusetts colony was fighting against the Pequot people, and they were trying to get all of the land. And so when the Pequot were doing a celebration, they were doing a harvest feast, which was a lot like Thanksgiving. And they're actually celebrating this moment. And it's like a harvest feast time, a ceremony. And the people of the Massachusetts colony send a group of people in and end up killing all of them. I mean, like, they set their houses on fire while they're still inside of it. They kill people, like they shoot anybody that runs out of the houses. It's very, very bloody. And then they come back to the Massachusetts colony, and the governor at the time says, let's have, I'm going to proclaim this a great Thanksgiving because we are celebrating that you have all come back unscathed from this massacre of the Pequot people. So when you're talking about Thanksgiving as the celebration of a massacre, you can find all these different points where they're celebrating. But in this case, you have the governor actually proclaiming a Thanksgiving to celebrate the massacre of the Pequot people.
I'd much rather honor and celebrate the harvest in that Thanksgiving rather than the massacre in that Thanksgiving.
And that's why people say it's so problematic, because even the terminology like Thanksgiving and that sort of thing, because it's really, if you're tracing it back to the way that colonists used it, right, that really it is sort of like a more of a day of mourning, because what you're marking Thanksgiving-wise is this massacre. But we don't, in the United States, start celebrating Thanksgiving until well after that. It's really like, a lot of people don't know this, but it was really because of Abraham Lincoln during the Civil War. He was trying to find a way to bring his country back together. And so he started telling this story about pilgrims and Indians, and pilgrims and Indians could come to the table and they could have this beautiful feast and everybody could live happily ever after. And why can't we be like that? Because we can do it. We've done it before. We can come together with people we disagree with or that aren't on the same page and create this really beautiful thing. So he starts talking about Thanksgiving that way during the Civil War. And that's where this like, kind of ideology of these happy pilgrims and these great Indians, and they all are so great and partners in everything. That's where that really comes from, is Abraham Lincoln.
Wow. So he is the orchestrator of the romanticized
story.
Yeah,
like the mythology of this.
Wow.
This story. And then it isn't really until after World War I that it becomes part of the curriculum in schools to sort of learn it in this way. So it takes like a long time before we as a country decide that Thanksgiving is so central to who we are. But it sort of starts from this point of like, how do we bring the country back together?
Well, so now let's talk about our own Thanksgiving traditions. What are some of yours in your family?
We eat a lot of food.
Consistent. Yeah. Same here.
Yeah. We find a way to sort of like come together as a family. I think that I don't think I've ever talked about pilgrims at my Thanksgiving. We definitely don't make hats or any sort of like, you know,
turkeys
like
out of
that.
Your handprint.
Yeah. This year, I think it's going to be very interesting. And I don't know if a lot of people know this, but I heard that the team that is going to be playing on Thanksgiving Day is the Washington Racial Slur team.
I like you saying that.
So they'll be the ones who are playing on Thanksgiving Day. And
let me guess, with America's team, the Cowboys?
I don't know. I mean, I remember one year it was Cowboys versus Indians. I remember one year it was on Thanksgiving, but
I think it's frequently. I historically from my childhood.
And I remember think about that in terms of like,
wow,
what they're trying to. But I remember because I was like, I remember one year it was, and then my mom was watching football and she was like, I can't believe they're making me root for the Cowboys. Like, you know what I mean?
Because you can't root for
the Washington Racial Slur team. Like, you just. Until they get rid of their name, I can't root for them.
Wow.
So it'll be, it's kind of those kinds of reminders constantly as an Indigenous person, right? Like we are forced to watch on Thanksgiving Day, a day that is about all of these things we just talked about, a team that is celebrating a racial slur against us, which is a term that they used to use to refer to proof of Indian kill. Which is like they would say, turn in your red skins so that you could get paid for killing Indians. So we as Indigenous peoples are faced with that all the time. What that means to live here and be in this space that's so very important to us as people, and then constantly be confronted with this is who we are, to sort of like this in this mass media consumption of us.
Kind of how I feel as an African-American, and the N-word being used and glorified in rap lyrics, and Europeans feeling because it is used in a lyric, it is a pass and a justification to say it as well. Not so much. It's a painful word by anyone.
And if you're going to start to say, well, Well, then what are we supposed to do about it? I would say the first thing is demand that they change the name of the Washington team. Like, demand it. Like, make sure that everybody knows that that's not – it's just – it's so obviously not okay.
Well, with the recent Supreme Court ruling with the – I can't remember the name of the band.
Oh, yeah. I can't remember either, but I know what you're talking
about. But it was a problematic name. It was a rock band. The person who created the band was an Asian man, I believe, and it's an Asian racial slur. So with that Supreme Court ruling, I'm sure it will make it even more difficult to demand that the name be changed, unless the owners and the board of directors and whoever makes the decisions for that team takes it upon themselves to change it.
It's true, but I mean, the Washington team had a different name before. They actually have changed their name before.
What was it before?
I can't remember. I know it was something else, but they had a different name before. I can't remember what it was.
Wow.
So I'm just saying, it's really not that hard for them to do it.
Hmm.
They just don't want to.
Yeah.
And part of it is because of these kinds of things. It's like this idea that we somehow are kind of just like we are the people that you are sort of able to say these things about because we're more stories than we are people, right? And then here we are confronted on Thanksgiving Day with this team, which, I mean, I'm sure people don't know. Like, they have done actual scientific studies which show that the presence of Native mascots actually does harm to our communities and our children. And it actually does harm to other people. It actually makes them think of Native people in really racialized way. And it actually makes them more prejudiced and racist against other groups of people when they are exposed to it. So it is a problem for our culture and our society.
A big problem.
And yet now we're all going to like get around the TV and watch these people do their thing.
Wow.
But I won't. I don't. I mean, I don't watch them.
Yeah. And aren't we boycotting the NFL anyway? Well, some of us are. So back to your Thanksgiving dinner, any special traditional foods that are served with your family?
I mean, every once in a while we have salmon if we're lucky enough. I mean, there's not a lot of salmon right now.
That's why I said,
because of a lot of like issues and really sad issues that are going on.
Right.
But yeah, sometimes we will have like salmon, and that's a lot of the reason is, I mean, I could see that this year because my daughter is a pescatarian, so she really only eats salmon. So we kind of...
How old is your daughter?
She's 10.
And she made that decision that...
She did, yeah. Wow. She did.
Okay.
She watched a lot of YouTube videos about why you shouldn't eat meat, and then she was all done, and then she only wants to eat meat that she knows... that she has kind of a relationship with in a way that she knows where it comes from, that it's like ethical and sustainable, that sort of thing. So.
And how old is she?
She's 10. Oh, yeah.
All right. More power to her. I'm proud. Well, she has a great mentor and mother, I'm guessing. Yes. So some of the foods, that whole pumpkin pie, sweet potato pie ordeal or battle that goes on. If a pumpkin pie is served at our family table for Thanksgiving, it's because someone was lazy and someone went to the supermarket and got a store-bought pumpkin. But it's almost like a cardinal sin in the African-American household to have a pumpkin pie. Pumpkin spice, pumpkin anything, it's all about the sweet potato pie. And the sweet potato pie, or the sweet potato casserole with the, like, marshmallows on top. I always hated that, but that was one of the traditions as well. So turkey, ham, venison, what is it for you?
It's usually turkey.
Okay.
What I really love is all these foods on Thanksgiving that we think of as so like this is such an American holiday, and it's like American families, and we really in America, we're all getting together. All these foods are really native foods. Sweet potatoes, pumpkins, potatoes, corn. It's all native foods. You know what I mean? That's all native foods.
Wow.
It all came from the Americas.
Right. Green bean casserole minus
the basis of any kind of the basis of our foods really comes from native people. We don't think about that. Like potatoes are.
I've never thought about
that. Yeah, potatoes are from the Americas. Like it's native people who introduced potatoes.
Wow.
To like a European diet. So, at chocolate. Native American, like that comes from Mexico. You know what I mean? Like that's
right.
Native American, like all these kind of foods that are very, very tied to us as Americans.
Wow.
Are from native people.
I never, ever made that connection. So in that sense, I feel like that makes it a little bit better to celebrate Thanksgiving. But the one thing that I enjoy about Thanksgiving more than the food, more than the day off from work, is my family coming together and giving thanks. The one thing I truly enjoyed, I haven't been home for Thanksgiving in 10 years, actually, back in Los Angeles. But what we would do is, and I'm from a very large family, so my large immediate family would all come together, my brothers and sisters, my parents when they were alive, nieces and nephews. So we would generally have 3 or 4 generations in the home, and we would all take the time to say what we were thankful for and how we were thankful for each other in some way. That part made Thanksgiving my favorite meal. I mean, not favorite meal. I'm taking it back to the food. But the favorite family tradition and favorite holiday. So I guess that will be my resolve if I focus on the thankfulness.
And I would put a plug in, too, for taking a moment, because we all know that this meal, this time for people right now is tied to this story we learn of the pilgrims and the Indians. But take a real moment, if you can, and learn the names, right? Learn Wampanoag, learn Massasoit, learn Metacom, like learn names, learn, like teach yourself something. Like say, if I'm going to at least have this holiday, like I'm going to take at least this day to acknowledge the native peoples of the area that I'm from, to acknowledge that I am on, you know, like here in Arcata, that we are on Wiat land. These are Wiat people. And to remind ourselves that we should not forget that the things that we are struggling for today very much are informed by the things from history, and that we have a responsibility to that if we're going to move forward and do anything.
Now that Thanksgiving is my responsibility for my family here in Arcata, I think I will take that next step and make that a new tradition to honor the names of the ancestors that made Thanksgiving possible. So I will introduce that to my family and my little 5-year-old granddaughter so she can get an early education side of that handprint turkey and the feathers on the construction paper. So thank you for that. Thank you very much for this enlightening, informative, and educational Thursday night talk, Kutcha. Hope to have you here again in the very near future. You said one thing, and I'm going to end with this. And you talked about Plymouth Rock, and all I could think of was the Malcolm X movie, where Malcolm says, "We didn't land on Plymouth Rock. Plymouth Rock landed on us." Kind of the truth. Wow. So once again, thank you for joining me, Kutcha. Would you like to add any last words at the end of the show?
You know, I think along those lines of Plymouth Rock or not, I would say it's not just that it's you didn't even land on Plymouth Rock. You landed on the land of the Wampanoag.
Right.
That's where it was.
Indeed. Well, as stated in the beginning of the program, through our conversations and understandings, we will discover that our differences aren't so different. I'd like to thank the Thursday Night Talk producer, Geraldine Goldberg, and the engineer, Michael Roccaforte, and a special to you. Take the time to be kind to each other and be mindful and try to speak only from a place of love. Thank you for tuning in.
You've been listening to Thursday Night Talk on KHSU. Special thanks to our hosts, Lorna Bryant, and our newest contributor, Kutcher Risling-Baldy. We love to get feedback on our programs. Please email ThursdayNightTalk@khsu.org and like our Facebook page, Thursday Night Talk on KHSU. Thursday Night Talk will be taking a break next week due to Thanksgiving. However you choose to celebrate or not celebrate, we at Thursday Night Talk wish you a happy holiday and a happy day off. Thanks to KHSU Thursday Night Talk producer Geraldine Goldberg. Our theme music is composed and performed by Jeff Kreider. My name is Michael. I've been your studio engineer tonight. Stay tuned to KHSU. No Room for Squares is coming up next.
Tune in to the KHSU Magazine, KHSU's midday public affairs program. Join hosts Claire Reynolds, Brian Curtis, Katie